Do we have new, fresh microphone covers?
They remind me of Muppet noses.
Speak into the cloud nose.
I forgot how we start this thing.
Don't look at me.
I don't know. I forgot how I start this thing.
Welcome.
Welcome to Head Full of Hannibal, your Baltimore Fannibal podcast. This is Amy.
I'm Jen.
We actually have not yet completed a full alcoholic beverage. Today we are joined by
Justin. I have a microphone today.
Yes. Producer Justin has a microphone.
I brought my own microphone.
Wow. Yes. With our fresh, what are these things called on the microphones?
Windscreens.
Windscreens. Yeah. Which cuts down on all the popping.
Yep.
And well, thank you, Justin, for taking care of our technical needs.
That's why I'm the producer.
Yep. It's a Saturday night, so I think our dynamic's a little different than it usually is when we podcast on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, yeah, when I'm just waking up. I'm like, what?
Okay. Talk about Hannibal.
All right.
Today you're fully ready. We had a full day of errands and tacos, so I'm ready to go. And today, Jen brought us delicious thematic cocktails, which are?
Well, I mean, so there's nothing to it, right? It's Prosecco and crushed ice and raspberry simple syrup, which is, you just make simple syrup. It's a cup of water and a cup of sugar. But then you can put whatever else you want in it. So raspberries. Strange. But it looks like blood in the snow.
Which is very, very appropriate.
Yeah, so I'm calling it a brave buster.
The bravest buster. Which we watched the episode this afternoon, and our dog Ranger reacts to dogs barking on TV.
Oh no, did he freak out?
He did freak out, but I had his current TV watching treats are cat crunchies in a little tin. So I was doling out the cat crunchies while he tried not to bark too much.
Yeah.
It was a pretty big day.
Aw.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was actually thematic across everything, the episode, and we're going to talk about the two movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely, like, the coldest episode. Like, this one? I guess hearing the stories about them filming, when I watched it this time, I was like,
like, I'm really glad I didn't have to do that. So yeah, we are eating that. We are drinking that. We are eating. We went to Neapol, which is a place that smokes whatever they can shove in their smoker, as far as I can tell. So we have a spicy smoked salmon cheese ball and whitefish salad from smoked whitefish and pears and some fresh made bread from Atwater's.
Yeah.
This is fun, when we're out, we're like, we should get snacks. And Justin was like, he wanted to get the smoked trout to go with Arctic. Mm-hmm. But we had to buy a whole smoked trout, which isn't tremendously large. But we're like, whoa.
You could probably put it in the freezer, you think?
I think. It still has the head on.
Oh.
It was an entire smoked trout.
Yeah. Ooh. I think they got them, but they leave the head on.
You could put it in stock, I bet.
Yeah.
Holy crap. That'd be good.
But I was feeling a little overwhelmed. Yeah. I was like, let's just get some other stuff. Yeah. So the smoked trout is in here in spirit. Well, we're eating different smoked fish. So we have a bunch of stuff today, not just the episode. I've been collecting links. Something that came across Facebook was a site called Tomboy Toes, and they do, I guess you would call them, I don't know if this is quite the right word, but sort of masculine styled shoes for a wide range of foot sizes, because people with smaller feet often can't find like wingtips and stuff.
Oh
yeah. So, and they have some nice colors, so I'll put a link to that, because I know some of our listeners and fanables are looking for fancy kicks. And then in line with fashion, I know I had reposted this to Twitter, but the Twitter thread about, I think it was, oh, I can't remember the person who posted it, Alexandra Rowland? The Beau fucking Brummel and the how men's fashion became super boring and because
all because of him,
because of the dandies, which I had always thought dandyism was like being super flamboyant,
right? Super fancy, super flamboyant, but it actually kind of means, or historically, it's more super picky
and exacting,
yeah,
and sort of pretentious through execution. Mm-hmm. I think I'd say not even so much like, obviously whatever you're wearing is going to be a really nice quality, right, but not through ornamentation, not making your stuff flashy, but because it's like how it's put together and how long it takes you to get together.
So yeah, it's like the incredible tailoring. But also, I think there was a discussion about the inside linings being really outrageous.
That was right? The side other rant.
Oh, okay.
That was about slashing clothing and how that started, and saying how the Italians were like, oh, we'll use a more common fabric on the outside because the what you see inside is the super fancy silks and brocades or whatever. But, you know, we don't have to put that on the outside because we're so fucking rich.
Right.
We can just show it off a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not much for Italian tailoring anyways. I don't like the Italian suit style. It's just...
I don't know about modern suits.
I way prefer like a traditional English style suit.
Is it slimmer?
The Italian is much more boxy and longer, and there's more buttons to it. Whereas like the traditional English, like you think of like a tweed suit, has it's much more sort of tailored to the body. I think it has a little more curve to it and structure to it.
Nice. Yeah, this was all like, I don't know how old this was, but yeah, I tend to think of, I always thought the dandies were like super fancy.
Yeah, me too.
But I think in the discussion there was mention that that was more like fops and another dress, aesthetic dress? Oh, something else that was a little, that was fancier. Yeah. I'm sure somebody's going to listen to this and be like, I know the answer.
I know.
Feel free to tell us.
And please tell us on Twitter or call in on our hotline.
I like fops.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the super
I'm about
fancy.
To sing some Sweeney Todd.
Justin has been doing sound and lights for a local production of Sweeney Todd.
It was excellent.
So instead of saying like man up, you could say fop up.
Yeah. But and like a friend of mine commented to me on Facebook that it also ties into the Napoleonic Wars and some other things that were happening at the same time. So it's not just Beau fucking Brummels being a asshole. But all this other stuff tied in.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Today we were at Old Navy because I had to buy a gray tank top for a costume. And I apologize to Justin for the sad state of men's fat, but like everyday men's fashion.
It's pretty sad.
It's real sad.
Khakis.
Yeah. Yeah, he was trying to find some slim cut pants and they were all like too long between the waistband and the crotch. Like, and you all can't see him. I would say Justin's probably an average sized man.
Yes.
Yep. You're a middle height, middle weight, like nothing. None of your proportions are extravagant.
You think I'd be able to have a better selection of clothes, but
no,
not for guys.
You get nothing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think we all have days where we just want to wear like a schlubby t-shirt and a pair of jeans, but it would be nice for everybody to also have the option to look fabulous.
I did buy myself a fabulous cardigan.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's plain. It's just black, but it is.
It's long and swooshy.
Yeah. It's from the, you know, Asian men's clothing that they sell on Amazon.
Oh, nice.
And it's like a three, it's like to the knees, slim cut cardigan. It is very goblin.
And apparently I have the same proportions as a 6 foot tall guy.
Oh, yeah.
With a slim build.
Yeah. When we measured him. But there is actually in this Twitter thread some side discussions where like one person ended up doing a blog post about how to dress colorful,
right?
If even if you are like, I wear a button down and pants every day, or like a hoodie or whatever. So yeah, everybody, please wear what you like. I also do have a sweatshirt, hoodie, dress that I wear on the days I want to be wearing pajamas.
Yeah, I have one of those too.
It's great. Next link is going to B, I don't know if you've seen this, the Venom photos with Hannibal dialogue and the Hannibal with Venom. And
I'm so glad somebody did this because I'm pretty sure we had a discussion about this before I saw this. We're like, oh, those lines would go so fabulously.
Well, did I put BYK? I think it's BYK23, who does Cannibals, mm-hmm. did the Venom with Hannibal dialogue.
Mm.
And then the Tumblr user Foz Meadows did the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
So they put them, there's a one. It's great.
It's so perfect. I mean, while I was seeing Venom, I had, like, there were lines that I was like, oh my God, this could be Hannibal and Will talking to each other.
I feel like it's kind of like, in some ways, I mean, Venom is a rom-com, mm-hmm. but it is sort of a, like, problematic, there's like consent issues, absolutely. And all of that stuff, so I feel like it's a natural, like, segue for anybody into Hannibal and shipping Hannibal to just slide right over there
to shipping Venom and Eddie Brock. Yeah. Absolutely. Just, yeah, like, that line about let's pile the heads in one corner and the bodies in the other. It's like, why? It's like, because it'd be awesome.
Gotta keep it neat.
Oh my God.
It's like separating your Skittles by colors before you eat them.
Same thing. I can totally see Hannibal saying that to Will, and we'll be like, what the fuck, Hannibal?
Because aesthetics. Duh. Next thing I have is an article. I think I got this off of the Rec Center. When fan fiction gets so popular, it spurs its own fandom and babies, which was on the Sci-Fi Wire by Christina Menente, I think the last name is. And it's really interesting article about when, like, fan fiction or fan works get so big, they have their own fandom.
Mm.
And I think the babies one is because somebody's, like, reading whatever fan fiction it was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's like, it really helped my sex life, and now we have a baby.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so.
I thought that was referring to, like, when spin-offs. Ships have babies and then the babies become almost canon in fanfic.
No, literal babies. Because
that happens.
Yeah, like, literal babies.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it was really good. It is the thing, like, and it made me think, mentioning before, like, all the cannibal stuff, all the in-jokes and the stuff, mm-hmm. and the people doing works based off of other stuff. Or all of Flying Rotten's.
Oh, yeah.
Work. Oh, Ranger's talking because the cat dared to walk into the other room. Sorry about that.
He brought his phone with him, though.
Yes. He was going to share his special chew thing we gave him.
Mm-hmm.
Something I read that was really interesting, writer Megan Daum, who I actually read some of her. I read an essay of hers that was one of those, holy shit, this person, like, knows exactly how I work, where, and it was part of a whole book that she wrote about a feeling she got first when she was a teenager that if she just lived in the right place, like the right physical space, her life would be perfect. And so as a teenager, she was like, the place I need to live is like a pre-war apartment on the Upper East Side, West Side of New York City.
Uh-huh.
And the way you do that is by going to this kind of college and becoming, like, a writer. And then you're going to live in New York City and you're going to live in an apartment like that. So it's not like your life just has, like, a job goal or something. Mm-hmm. It has, like, a physical manifestation.
Hmm.
And so her whole book is kind of about chasing that. But this was an essay she wrote called Basically Dead, a Gen Xer Contemplates Mortality, Burial, and Decay, which was on Medium. And she mentions the Infinity Burial suit, which Annabelle brought up at Fanable Fest, is a, I think, not yet on the market. It's like a full body covering suit that is made so that they put a body into it and it becomes, the body becomes the fodder for mushrooms that are, like, implanted into the suit.
Yeah, I remember she had slides of it.
There's a TED Talk for that that we can link.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, because I don't know if she had any, like, actual it being used. photos or if it was all mock-ups.
Yeah, she had prototypes and then there was like a drawing of what happens. But it's basically like it looks like a little white hazmat suit with all of the spores in there. And so they just sprout and you put them in the ground. It's pretty genius. Mm-hmm. And God knows that we need some sort of relooking at like burial and death. Yeah.
Well, the whole essay, she kind of talks about that and thinking about, you know, she's in her 40s about dying one day and her options and what she wants to do. I'm going to quote a little bit of it. "For now, though, I'm wondering if my visceral need to decay into the loamy earth speaks to some sort of visceral need to be relevant, to feel a tactile connection to people, places, and things. Maybe the idea of being eaten by microbes and fungus has something in common with the feeling of handing someone your business card, talking to a stranger in a bookstore, strolling through prairie grass in a cotton dress, or simply paying with cash. Maybe this obsession with being dead is actually fantasy about staying alive in ways that seem no longer possible, or at least no longer useful in today's world." So it's really good. But I know people tend to like slightly morbid things in fandom. So I thought that it would be great. The next one, I had had this saved for like a week and finally got around to reading it, or maybe less than a week. It is an article in The New Yorker. Online, it's called "The Female Chef Making Japan's Most Elaborate Cuisine Her Own: How Nikki Nakayama's Kaiseki Restaurant Became a Highly Coveted Reservation in LA" by Helen Rosner. And it's this chef, Nikki Nakayama, started a restaurant that does kaiseki, not 100% Japanese because of availability and stuff like that, but definitely adhering to the whole idea of the kaiseki meal. And it was a really fascinating read.
I want to go.
Yeah, I know I want to go. It's apparently like $225 for
that's not bad
for the meal. And the way the reservation system reminds me of getting into minibar, where it was like, I think it was like on a Sunday at 10 o'clock and opens up for reservations for like 3 months ahead. And they were saying at 10:01, the reservations open. And by 10:01,
wow,
they're all filled.
I totally want
to
go.
And people have tried to like bribe them into giving them reservations and stuff. But I thought, I was reading this article and here is this super appropriate section, because today the episode we're covering is Shizakana. "For the hearty course called Shizakana, which typically features a meaty soup or stew, Nakayama serves pasta, a swirl of spaghetti a la chitara, tossed in a creamy ragu of abalone liver and pickled cod roe, topped with burgundy black truffles. In a meal of restrained and finely drawn flavors, it growls with a brazen decadence. It is the only dish that never leaves Nanaka's menu."
That sounds amazing.
I know.
I think we need to go. I've never been to LA.
Neither have I. My nephew lived there for ages, or like 10 years, and I never went. But it was really, and it's, you know, they talk about being a female chef, being a female chef. Like they said when she opened that restaurant, she was the only, I think, as far as I could tell, the only female run kaiseki restaurant in the world.
Wow.
And my last thing in this lead up was a fic. I don't even know how I came across this. It's from 2013 by Talanu, called Toe Tapping Fun. That is about, it's the whole scene when Clarice goes and offers Hannibal, like, you'll get your view. You'll get this stuff.
Yeah.
Except instead it's like, if you tell us all this stuff, we'll prevent Andrew Lloyd Webber from writing a musical about you called Hannibal, the musical. This was written in 2013. Silence, the musical, was from 2005.
Which I still have not seen.
I have not
seen it. I mean, I've heard the music from it, but yeah.
It was very funny, but there's this little bit. But what, Lecter stopped and cleared his throat. What, may I ask, will be the title of this thing? He continued, his voice slightly less choked. It's in the papers, Starling said helpfully, but I think right now they're planning to call it just Hannibal, the musical. His eyes seemed to drill all the way into her skull. There was an exclamation point in there somewhere, Agent Starling, he snarled. Do not lie to me. I heard it. Yes, sir. After Hannibal. It was really funny.
Oh my God.
Highly recommended. Love seeing stuff that's from a long time
ago.
We have a fondness for Hannibal and Clarice. So then I think, Jen, you have some things.
I have some random things. The one thing I wanted to mention is I really wish I had watched this before our last episode with the social worker in the horse, are the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix, because I watched it right after we did that episode and I realized, oh my God, that dude is totally doing Ted Bundy. Like he's like the sort of mild-mannered, handsome, like the social worker character. Yeah. Was completely doing a Ted, like an ode to Ted Bundy in that episode. And yeah, I mean, Netflix has a lot of serial killer docs on there right now. And the Ted Bundy one, I mean, if it's really fascinating, there's some stuff in there that hasn't been in any of the books. And it's really fascinating to hear all of the law enforcement people and lawyers and judges who dealt with his case, who are all white, by the way, talk about how, like, tell the story and talk about how brilliant he was and how he got away with all this stuff, and how, like, the judge even said in his, because, of course, Ted Bundy represented himself in his case, right? The judge said at the end of the case, I'm so sad your life went a different way because you would have made a great lawyer and I would have loved to have you in my court. It was like, what the fuck?
You're still praising this guy after
After you heard about, like, what he did. Like, I mean, his crimes were horrendous, right? And so it was really fascinating. And I know we talked about early on in the podcast about like how white privilege plays into, like, how do these guys get away with stuff? And it is like, growing up, it was amazing to me because I, like, you know, heard about Ted Bundy being executed, and the way you hear about his case, like, he's this charming man who charmed all these women and then killed them. And that's not actually the story. He broke into people's houses at night and brutally murdered them.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, and they had in this documentary, one of the first times they almost caught him, he was hanging out at a lake. He had a white van. He was pretending he had a fake cast on, and he was pretending to load up the van with stuff, and he was asking women for help. And that's how he got, like, this one woman. He pushed her in the van and went.
Oh my God.
And I was like, that's Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. So I didn't know there was, like, this kind of connection, but it was also, it was really just fucking fascinating to hear this disconnect between the story about him being so brilliant and the fact is that he was not brilliant at all. He was
hiding in plain sight.
Totally overlooked. I mean, he broke out of jail because basically they let him roam around the law library to research his case on the second floor, and so he just opened a window and jumped out. That's how he got away. And it just, I mean, I thought it was really fascinating and chilling. And the very end of it, they kind of, like, save the best part of the tape for last when he's, like, finally kind of fesses up to the kind of person he is and talks about, like, where the bodies are buried and, like, all the, like, what he did. And yeah. So if you're into that kind of thing, I highly recommend it.
But, and you feel like, I know I saw some people were worried that it was going to be really a sort of, not sensationalized, but I just spaced out the word I was thinking.
Cover romanticized view
of
him.
Yes, romanticized.
Yeah. I can see how, on one hand, you could interpret it that way. Like, if people, if you go in thinking that, you would think that. But if you go in with a critical eye about those kind of things, you can completely see through, you know, like, that's that thing the judge said to him is, like, outrageous.
And totally fucking typical.
And totally typical. Yeah. Like, mediocre white man. Mm-hmm. He's brilliant.
What's that thing? I want to go through life with the confidence of a mediocre yeah. white man.
And it's just like, whoa.
I
think
about that a lot.
Yeah.
I know I should watch that. I hadn't because I a lot of documentary stuff just I was saying this to Justin earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that's sympathetic, usually there is a certain cringe factor I mm-hmm. can't really handle. And sometimes I can't handle it because stuff like this, I know I'm just going to get really angry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating on one level, but I think it definitely ties into a lot of what's going on today with, you know, we have terrorists out there, white supremacist terrorists, and people are minimizing it and mm-hmm. saying, oh, it's just one man who's, you know, troubled man or whatever. And then like to watch this documentary and hear them talk about him, like, oh, he had a troubled childhood and he was really brilliant. Well, no, actually he wasn't. Like, he failed out of law school. Like,
yeah. and he was a monster.
Yeah.
He was a terrible monster. And
couldn't stop. Also, like, could not stop. Just like started up in Oregon, went like across the country, ended up down in Florida, and like broke into a sorority house one night and just like killed like four women. And then when the cops were at that site, he was like a half hour down the street killing some other woman. Like, he literally could not stop himself. And I don't know. I find that fascinating yeah. and creepy and horrible.
Yeah. Maybe I will check it out now.
So, yeah. anyway.
Thank you for talking about it.
Yeah.
What's your next thing that you have?
Oh, Madstetic? Is that how you say the person on Twitter?
I think.
Posted this really great clip of Monsters Incorporated, the Danish version, mm-hmm. because Maz played Randall, one of the monsters in it. And it's really cute.
No.
And it's one of those things where when you see it post on Twitter and then all the people, like all the fanables are like, I'm having weird emotions around this cartoon monster. Help. Because he's like yelling in Danish and it's fabulous. And then I came across this old post from one of the set designers mm-hmm. on Hannibal about how they set up Hannibal's house and Will's house as basically like opposites.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really fascinating. Number one, that she came from she was curating a Stanley Kubrick exhibit in LA when she was working on this. I was like, oh, that's great. Totally appropriate. But I thought it was really fascinating because she talks about staging Hannibal's house as a theater. So it's like a theater of the mind where he can perform as this person where she talks about the kitchen as being autopsy tables.
Mm-hmm.
And his dining room as they painted it like the night sky and they put the herbs in because they wanted it to be like this outdoor theater where he held court.
Mm.
And then like talked about Will's place as just being this little old farmhouse where Will just bought it one day and decided to sleep on the bottom floor because he was so paranoid. He wanted to like see out all the windows and the front door. So he never really used the top floor. And what else did she say about it? He lives there with his dogs, his motorboat parts, and his fishing tackle. He does not have a computer and he does not bring work home.
No.
And I just, yeah, it's just this fascinating little contrast. Yeah. Yeah. Like she talks about at Hannibal's office, color coding all of the journals for his clients.
Mm.
And they came up with a system and they spent hours making sure all the little dots were color coded the right way on the shelves.
Oh, well. Other people would have just like covered random books and been like, there you go.
Buy some random books, throw them in. It'll be great.
Cool. I'm going to have to read that.
Yeah. And then I wanted to mention that I am also currently reading a Hannibal fanfic called The Stagwood Accord by the Countess Olivia. I'm just going to read you the tags and then you can go figure it out for yourself. I'm like, what is my life? Tags including dark fairy tale, murderous trees, sex sap seduction, sex with actual trees, slow burn, unsafe tree cuddling. And it reminds me of one of my favorite movies, Perfume. Have you ever seen that with Ben Whishaw?
I've heard about it.
Oh, so good.
Okay.
He is a perfumer in France, and he's born having this sense of smell that nobody else has.
Oh.
And he ends up being obsessed with a certain smell of people. Mm-hmm. So he kills people and covers them with like some sort of fat that like sucks mm-hmm. the like scent out of and then scrapes it off and like makes this perfume.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's Ben Whishaw.
And it's Ben Whishaw.
Yes.
It's a good movie. If you've never seen it, you really have to see it.
I'll add that. That sounds yeah. really good.
So anyway, this pic reminds me of that. Because it's all about perfumery in this weird sort of fairy tale world called Balti. and it's about a Wendigo tree and weird stuff. And yeah.
Ooh, I'm gonna have to look this one up.
Yeah.
Cause I don't think I've seen a lot of new stuff recently. And no, somebody did just do one and I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
This one I think is currently being written.
Okay.
Like currently being updated.
I'll take a chance on current ones. I'm one of those people who I'm like, I'll do it. Even though one of my favorite, maybe that's just my favorite now because part two never came out to a part one. Uh-huh. And I'm like 2 years later, I'm like, could you please update?
What fic is that?
I forgot the name of it. Aww. It's, I have it saved in my favorites. It was for one of the gift, like the Christmas holiday exchanges. Mm-hmm. And the person put up part one for their gift. And it's one where they're like in Russia, I think, in some property that Hannibal has there, like right at the edge of the woods and getting snowed in. And Will finds passports and paperwork for him, Hannibal, and Abigail, like in a closet. And that was the end of part one. And no! The person wrote, like, you know, I just have to tighten up like part two or whatever and I'll get it out. And I'm like, where is it? You were so close.
Oh, no.
I have commented at least once where I was like, if you ever want to update, I'll be really happy if you do. But no pressure.
Yeah.
If it's new, it's just floating around and you just forgot, please update it. It was great. Mm. So we wanted to talk a little bit about Polar and Arctic, which really the naming, my friend Sarah was like, wait, they're not the same thing?
No.
They are completely different. Justin, you didn't get a chance to watch Polar.
I did not. It'll be there for a bit on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. Jen and I got together and watched it. Which I've seen like both sides of the spectrum before we saw it, where people were like, oh, it's great. People were like, this was trash. And I would call it great trash.
It was great trash. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And it was, I didn't really like end up expecting a lot of it out of it. And it was like kind of stupid fun in parts.
Yeah.
It is a little like the whole, I can't remember the character's name, which is really sad. Basically the one they use is the honeypot, the pretty young woman. Like all the parts, I was like, I mean, we didn't really need to see her naked.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't really need the sex scenes quite like that.
They were ridiculous.
But they were ridiculous on top of it. Like, on the other hand, it was, like, so over the top.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, that's what they were going for, was sort of the over the top ridiculous thing. But if it doesn't actually get there, then there's all this space to kind of critique it and go, oh, that didn't feel very good or right, or, you know, that was really misogynistic and weird.
Yeah.
There's like this weird, like, if you do it well, then I'm not even going to critique you. It's just like, I'm just going to go for the roller coaster ride, but it didn't get there.
Well, and I felt like those parts were, it almost felt like a comic book movie, but it was never extravagant enough or funny enough or any of that enough.
Well, it was based on a comic book.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. So I think that's what they were going for. I don't think they got there. Mm-mm. But Mads was beautiful in it.
And the parts like with him in that small town and all of that, which felt like a completely different movie. I had actually a little time, like watching it, I had to think about it later to put all the parts together, like his connection to mm-hmm. the young woman. I should have written everybody's names down.
All right.
And I was like, wait, what, how, what's the link? What? And so, yeah, it's the thing. I felt like it was a little muddled, mm-hmm. like stuff wasn't quite tied together mm-hmm. well enough, but it was fun to see him do like this crazy ass action. I mean, he loves that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I remember him running around in the snow naked killing people, and
that's good enough for you.
And yeah, and teaching at the kindergarten, which was
that
hysterical.
that was the best scene. And I liked the actress, the one who's from Vikings. Catherine Winnick.
Yeah, Catherine Winnick.
Do you know her name?
Yeah.
I liked how her character was like different and mm-hmm. And that kind of way that, like, you know, it was sort of the whole industry in there is like a man's world, and how mm-hmm. she had to be in order to get by.
Yeah.
But her own overconfidence. So yeah, I mean, it was worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, if you have Netflix already, what the hell? Just turn it on.
Yeah, watch it.
What else are you doing with your life?
Now, Arctic, we schlepped to Northern Virginia on a Sunday morning because we love you, Mads. We love you.
It's only the distance between Baltimore and Wolf Trap.
Yeah, we passed Wolf Trap on the way.
We passed the exit, but I think we weren't quite as far as Wolf Trap's farther west, but we passed the exit for it.
Yeah, it's about that.
So, yes, we went to Northern Virginia to watch this film. Because it still hasn't shown up in Baltimore yet, I don't think. And it was totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it was like not the sort of movie I'd usually go see. That kind of survival thing makes me really tense. Justin, you said it was like it reminded you of All Is Lost.
It's like a better version of All Is Lost because All Is Lost, the main character, who's only credited as our man, did kind of make a lot of mistakes. He could have done a lot of things better. There was no good reason for him to be there. Where this one, you have someone who's very competent and doing all the right things and still maybe not make it out.
Yeah.
So it had like a lot more stakes and real tension in it.
Mm. But I mean, I'm like, what can I say about it? Except it was really good.
Well, we didn't really explain it, what it is.
I mean, everybody's listening to our podcast. That's what it's about.
Sure.
Probably a lot of people haven't seen it because they don't.
Oh,
because
they'll really release it.
If they're not. Yeah.
I think they actually, Joe Penna, is that how his name's pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
I think they might possibly have just made back their production budget.
Wow.
Possibly. And it's been really limited. So it's, well, to start with him, this is his first full length film, the director. He had done, I think, a short and then commercials and stuff, which I never would have guessed at watching this, that mm-hmm. this was this person's first film.
But he had like a big following on YouTube, though, right?
Yeah, he's like a YouTube person.
He's
like
the number one personality in Brazil.
I think he's Brazilian.
Yeah. Okay. He's like number one channel guitar guy.
I'm like, we should do some research. And then Martha De Laurentiis was a producer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they got Mads to do it. And I don't know if anybody else Hannibal related was involved. And they shot it in 19 days in Iceland.
Yeah.
And it's about I guess he's supposed to be sort of like a cargo plane.
Well, that's one of the things I loved about it. You really didn't know. You didn't have any backstory about that guy. And I thought that was fabulous because by the end of the film, it doesn't matter who he was. Because he's a different person.
Yeah.
Like, whether he lives or dies at the end of that, which is kind of up in the air, he's obviously changed.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really matter what his backstory is.
Yeah. And you're learning about him with him at the same time.
Yeah.
It's kind of by what his actions are and how he handles everything.
Yeah. I'm so glad they didn't do backstory. And I heard, I think, for a while they were going to do flashbacks as part of the movie, and then they decided against it, and I think that was a really good decision.
And it's like, so the premise is he actually, you don't even know if he was the pilot mm-hmm. of the plane, but it looks like a cargo plane, maybe bringing supplies or people to science stations in the Arctic, mm-hmm. and it crashed, and he is by himself and surviving, mm-hmm. and trying to make contact with people, and a helicopter crew does come, and when trying to, they see him and then end up crashing their helicopter, and one person survives, and so he ends up, he has someone with him who's injured. And he decides to take the chance to get them to
a winter station.
Yeah, a winter station, which will hopefully have supplies and a way to get through to people. And of course, you know, tries one thing, shit happens. Tries another thing, more crap happens. At one point, there's a polar bear. And yeah, it was just like, well, we were saying we're really glad we saw it on a big screen because the visuals are so, like, the scenery and mm-hmm. the place is so important to the story.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know who else they could have gotten to play that role. Mads, as we all know, has this way of telling a story without any dialogue, mm-hmm. and he really, like, brought that in this film. I mean, there was this scene where he's kind of adjusting the woman who's injured and in a coma or whatever and trying to put her down. And so he picks her up and he's like got her over his shoulder and he like kind of stays there for a minute because it's the first human touch that he's had in so long. And you can see on his face, like, he's just amazing in it. Mm-hmm.
It was real good. So if it does come around, see it. If you can't see it in the theater and you got to rent it or see it online, do that too. Yeah. It was really good. Yeah. So I'm hoping that this means that the director will get to do more because mm-hmm. it was really good.
Yeah.
And it was totally worth getting up early and going to North Virginia.
Yeah. He definitely scored a home run with the cast, though. He had like the best material to work with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And yeah. he used it well. Yes. He's not wasting it at all. No. You were saying that they cut dialogue out of it because didn't need it.
Yeah, he had some dialogue in there. And then when Maz was cast, they were like, oh, we'll just cross out
these lines.
He does say stuff.
Look this way and think about that. All right.
Yeah. He does say stuff, but not a lot.
Yeah. He has more lines than he did in Valhalla Rising.
Where he had none. None of them. And he still does an amazing job. I remember watching that film and being like, well, I don't know what that was about, but it was pretty effective. Like, it actually was really effective.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that movie was about either.
So, do we want refills before we keep going? Should we take a little pause, Justin?
Yeah.
Sure. Do you want to just let it keep running?
Let me see if I can pause it here.
We're back. We had to re-up our drinks.
Woo!
Because it was really good. We added a little more raspberry syrup this time around, so they're extra fancy.
Mm. Or bloody.
Mm-hmm. Extra bloody.
Oh, I can really taste the raspberry now.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So, this episode, we're in season 2, episode 9, Shizakana. Which, as we can tell from before, is usually like a hearty stew, like a hot pot
mm-hmm.
or something like that. Oh, man,
hot pot.
Yeah. I know, we do have to go. Oh. There's so much food to eat with friends and only so many weekends in which to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've been to the hot pot place.
I did. I broke down and I went just randomly one night with a friend of mine. And it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one where they have a little beltway thing where you can pick your.
Oh, I haven't been to that one.
Oh, you haven't been to that one?
I've been to Hot Pot Hero.
Oh, we went to
the other hot pot
place. The other hot pot place up the street from that hot pot place.
We should go. We should go to both of them the same night.
It's cute because it has a little, you know, like the little, like if you go to the sushi places that uh-huh. have like the thing that goes mm-hmm. around, it's this little thing that goes around the entire restaurant with little, all the vegetables and noodles. Mm. So you just pick them off and throw them in your hot pot.
Because Hot Pot Hero, you just order all your stuff up front. And we went, and that's how we ended up with an entire table with absolutely no room to put anything else because we had ordered so much stuff. It's really tasty. Yeah. We recommend if you have a hot pot restaurant near you to go. It's great. I mean, you can go in the summer, but if it's winter where you are, it's really nice when it's go cold outside.
Get some hot pot.
And it is communal fun eating with people, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I like Korean barbecue is tasty, but I really like just the atmosphere of like talking and eating and all that with friends. I'm still going to do Korean food for you all. I just have to settle exactly on what I want to make now that I'm not whole 30ing. Justin and I did a whole 30 because our eating habits had gone a little off the rails over the holiday, and we just wanted to take a break, and it went fine. But you know, that was one of the big thing for me was the like we did went to some parties and potlucks, and I'm like, it's a little tough. And also if you're eating out.
Yeah.
So
it's sad to have your band eating tacos and you get a really big salad that costs way more than their tacos.
That sucks.
Yeah. So like Whole 30 did nice things, but if I can't have tacos, fuck that. So it's not an all the time thing for me. If I can't have tacos.
All right. So anyways,
sorry. I like talking about food. There isn't an omelet.
Yeah, it makes an omelet.
So they start out with the tree scene. We've been to that tree.
That tree. It was fun to stand across the street and watch everybody line up. Mm-hmm. I have a great picture of tons of people lined up to stand next to a tree.
they were calling the tree of the beloved because of the whole speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really looking at it this time because I've been there. And I'm guessing the only reason it looked like they had more space and everything is because it was winter and all the like green, like all the plants and everything were smashed down around it. It's a pretty average tree.
Like by the side of the road and kind of a ditch
in a park
area in a park at the entrance to a park.
Yeah. It wasn't even very far in the park. But I was, and I was also noticing this time, I was like, oh, we're having like well-groomed Will. We're having like Danger Will with his like Danger buttoned Will. Up into his coat with his scarf and
murder baby Will.
Well, it's his dream. It is his dream. But I noticed this time about how he doesn't look particularly happy about the whole scenario. Like, it seems like the thing where he'd be feeling sort of victorious and all, and he just looks sort of anguished and sad.
Yes. Yeah. His eyes are kind of tearing up. Mm. And yeah, I noticed that too. And I know I've heard some people say like, oh, well, this is Will's dream. So both sides of this conversation are actually Will. So when Hannibal's saying all this stuff about loving him and becoming and everything, it's actually Will talking to himself, or how he wants Hannibal to talk to him. But I had this thought when I was watching it this morning. He's such an empath, and he's able to empathically kind of go into other people's space. What if it's more of a sharing of two mind palaces? And that there is actually some of Hannibal in there, that he's kind of like figured out.
Well, it would kind of play into parts of season three, and particularly the post-credits show finale scene.
Yeah.
And that, like, if this is sort of a precursor to like greater mind palace sharing. Or just that like you said, he's an empath. So he's just brain dumping what he's already picked up.
Right. Because we've seen Will, like almost every episode, go into other people's mind space and figure out what their motivations are. And so I don't know if it's really as, you know, like Will wanting to hear what Hannibal's saying, or Will just hearing really what Hannibal's saying.
Yeah.
In therapy deep down that he's really not saying.
Yeah.
Like they're having a more honest conversation in this weird empathic shared mind palace.
But also the way like they cut the dialogue for it, which I mean, this is kind of a thing, it's sort of a death of the author. Like we know what was supposed to be in the rest of that speech.
Right. He says, I love you, Will. And they cut that out. Yeah.
And
damn you.
I know. It's you know why they did it? It's because everybody would have spontaneously combusted and there would have been no audience for the show. So maybe it's a good thing.
We'd all still be here.
You have confidence in yourself. I would have spontaneously combusted. But, we know what the rest of the speech was. So we can also get the idea of, like, where he stopped. Either what he was thinking or he was getting from Hannibal.
The other interesting thing about the scene is that is Hannibal's first murder in the Hannibal Rising book. That's how he kills his first guy.
Oh.
Is he ties him to a tree and hooks it to the horse in the cart and has the horse pull him.
Mm.
So,
I forgot that.
Yeah.
I've forgotten a lot of Hannibal Rising.
Yeah.
Except for my mental image of Hannibal on his motorbike.
Not the best movie book. But I love that they put that in there.
Mm. They worked it in a much more dramatic,
yeah,
effective way. And then I had made the point to myself later, but I feel like the Raven Stag's back for the first time in a while. And I've always had the thing of, like, some people have the interpretation that the Raven Stag is Hannibal's influence on Will, where mm-hmm. I've always felt like the Raven Stag is his sort of, I don't know, his avatar or his whatever.
Have you ever seen Dexter? Did you ever watch Dexter?
No, I never did.
Dexter talks about his dark passenger in the book and the show. And I kind of feel like that's a good way to describe the Raven Stag for Will. It's like his dark passenger, his murderous self.
Yeah.
Kind of like behind him.
Well, because in season one, it seems like it's trying to tell him something. Mm-hmm. Like, wake up. What are you doing? I guess in a way, it's still a wake up, but it's... You know, it's like, it's as Will has changed, so has the stag.
Yeah. And he's got control over it. He whistles and the stag does what he's telling him to do, which I find kind of fascinating. It's a really really interesting scene. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no real reason to put it in except to kind of, like,
be artsy
fabulous. And then sploosh. Cheers.
Cheers.
Blood splooshes.
What did you say the name of this was again? The Bravest Buster?
The Brave Buster.
The Brave Buster. Oh, no, I had to add the Bravest. As opposed to all the other busters that were in the show. Then we have the one cooking scene, which I meant to look up Granada and see it, like, just what Granada is like, because he talks about being there, I never did, so it'd suck. I felt like it's not the same exact words, or I cannot quite remember what Hannibal says to. No, he tells Alana not to be brave in Mizumuno, but there was, like, to me a parallel feeling with Hannibal talking about it being good to forget, like this, like almost like a warning kind of thing of, you know, saying to Jack, like, it can be good to forget the things that you don't want to know about. It also made me think more of the you know, Hannibal's origins that you get more through the book and all the things that he wants to forget and isn't able to. But this scene felt a little fillery. You know, like, it's like they needed to make sure to put a cooking scene in or something. Whose liver is he cooking? Is it Bev's?
Oh, God.
Has he still got parts of Bev to cook?
I think so, yeah.
I don't think I'd eat that. Pardon me for a moment.
Oh.
We have a lot of interruptions today. When we record later, we gave the dog, like, this thing to chew on, and he apparently just tried to inhale a piece of it. So everything's cool, though. The dog is fine.
We're talking about liver omelet, human liver omelets, and there's, like, a dog borking up in the back.
He just spit out a piece of his no hide, like, not raw hide chew toy. And we go right into the first murder scene. And I did have a comment that I made. I was thinking to myself, I'm like, I feel at this point in the show, they're like, we just need to have these murders both to heighten the connection to the storyline, but because otherwise it's just people sitting around talking and it's
in really intense ways about their intense feelings about killing
and each other.
And
it's like, if they didn't have something that was making a little tension, like, then it would be there'd just be less to captivate people. I don't know. But So my only, the only thing I had to say for this is that this whole driver getting killed scene, I was like, that was real close to like this truck stop. Like nobody noticed this poor guy screaming and getting eviscerated on the top of an 18 wheeler. Like nobody noticed. What?
Yeah.
No. But it was very dramatic, particularly the, the crime scene. Then we have got the replay of what happened in the barn twice in the same scene in Hannibal's office.
Because Will's in therapy talking about how he wishes it had turned out differently.
Yes, because he regrets. And I was like, he really sounds like Bedelia. His delivery really sounds like Bedelia here. That he regrets letting Hannibal stop him. Which I was wondering was sort of a double speak for he also regrets not shooting Hannibal in his kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because he says, he's like, I, you know, have regrets for what I didn't do. I noticed when he's rethinking through the whole scenario as if he had actually shot, that it's the thing that spins around in the air.
Bull roarer.
It's the bull roarer, the Wendigo sound.
Oh!
Is happening in the background. During that one. I have to say it is very satisfying to see him shoot Clark Ingram. Because that guy was just the fucking worst.
Shoot that fucking guy.
And I described it as he's saying that he's like chasing the high of how it feels to kill.
Garrett Jacob Hobbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're at such a weird point in the story, in the three season arc, where I remember being really starting to be really confused watching it on television because you don't know what is Will lying to get Hannibal like into like to open like, up.
I forgot that there was like a long game.
Yeah. Like, so like, is Will telling the truth here about his feelings or is he making this up to entice Hannibal into this whole world? Cause he knows that's going to be the hook that catches him. And it's almost like I think Will thinks he's playing Hannibal. And Hannibal obviously doesn't know he's being played yet. But I also think Will is drawing this stuff from a place of honesty that he doesn't really know it's like actually his, like as much as it is. So it's interesting to go back and do this rewatch knowing the whole thing. And kind of knowing that Will is just as in a weird place as the viewer. And that it's supposed to be that way.
Like his motivations are murky.
Yeah.
His ulterior motive is murky. His
Because he doesn't even know.
Because his reactions and everything and his actions and reactions all seem to be very genuine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they are. And I, it's just a really interesting place. And I don't think that happens a lot on television with television characters. And especially as a viewer watching, like you always kind of know the motivations.
What is your face? The dog just came up and licked my hands and his face is disgusting. So I'm sorry for interrupting the flow of conversation with my dog's face is gross look. He just came up very enthusiastically. Well, I think that in a lot of other shows, you would get a sort of wink, nod, nudge, or you would get in the, because they don't, and they say in the last episode of, before in Hannibal, they never show any previous parts for this episode where they talk about how they're going to try to reel them in.
Right.
It's it so nothing. So you're not getting the re-emphasis that this is all a ploy.
Yeah, Will's like, I'm a good fisherman, Jack.
Yeah. Instead, you're like sunk into the whole story with the characters.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, Hannibal is smart enough that I think that if Will had gone into anything, if he had not gone into it with his, basically how he's actually feeling, then Hannibal would have caught on. To it.
Yeah, like he had to kind of pull from an honest place. I don't think he could have outright lied to Hannibal because Hannibal would have been like, meh, whatever. So he's saying, oh, okay, I see like there's this potential here and I'm going to use this as bait. But Yeah, like it's all confusing.
Well, and that's kind of like the whole show. One of its, I think, its strengths is in its writing is what is how truth is given, and you know, it's like the elimination of certain things is, you know, what because Hannibal, I don't think in the whole story, I mean, I don't think he ever says that he actually kills people. I can't remember. Maybe it's not. I mean, never in the first two seasons.
He does when Abigail asks him, "Have you? How many people have you killed?" And Hannibal says, "A lot more than your dad."
Okay.
Yeah,
I forgot.
I do remember that part.
But like, he always, like with him and Will, I don't know when. I can't remember when he ever says it. We'll find out. But he's always like, he's saying it without saying it.
Right. So you got to be poetic and weird about all of it.
Yes. But like this. You know, Will, like, bringing him in by being truthful yet still with an ulterior motive is very... It's on brand. Then there's, you know, him and Margot. Will and Margot meeting outside. And then her discussion with Hannibal talking about dehumanizing people. And I was like, that's, like, you know, obviously Hannibal's whole thing is... Maybe he doesn't even dehumanize them, as he so feels so above humans that he doesn't even have to dehumanize them. He just has to let them be what they are, because he's so far, he thinks he's so much better than them. But her, the stuff she says to Hannibal, I was like, she comes across, I remember the discussion about, I think Brian Fuller was saying that for him, Bedelia was always like the smartest person in the room.
Oh, totally.
But here I'm also like, Margot comes across as very smart.
She does. I mean, I think Margot is very smart, but I also think Margot is like not about playing that game. Like, she's just like, I've grown up in this game. It's fucked up. It's bizarre. I want out. Like, I went out of all of this crazy shit happening. And it's kind of nice that, like, she eventually gets out. Whereas I think Bedelia, to borrow a line from Hannibal, delights in it. Like, she loves to play the game. And she's good at it.
Well, they re-showed the little bit where she's like, I believe you. And I'm like, do you have to be so fucking dramatic, Bedelia? Apparently you do.
You do. I was just reading, somebody posted a link to the Hannibal Works as like a I wish I could remember it. Like, basically saying you could flip the roles and have Bedelia play Hannibal and have Hannibal play Bedelia, like, without even, like, no bothering with the gender or whatever, and it would totally work.
Just make the show called Bedelia instead
of Hannibal. Yeah. Dr. Bedelia.
Dr. Bedelia.
Great. I would watch it.
Oh, I was going to say, so just to go back really quickly, in the discussion with Will and Hannibal, that was the first adapt, evolve, become, I think, where they really lay that out. I think it's, the becoming. It's when it starts to ramp up.
Yeah.
Then we have our crime scene, which is our sort of humorous interlude. In a way. And I said, I just love how Zeller sounds completely delighted. He's like up there on top of that thing, like, woo, doing my job, out the cold. Then the scene with the institution in the, I guess that's the Baltimore state, I can't even know which one it is now, with Peter and his rat, Kevin.
Okay, so Peter and the rat, Kevin. First of all, it's the most endearing, beautiful thing ever. It's so cute. But why did Will, who is investigating this case on a murder by a bear or a, what is it? Bear or a wolf. Why didn't he go to a zoo? Or the Smithsonian or something?
Because they're tired of this bullshit.
He goes to talk to the dude who was involved in last week's case. I mean, I understand because Jeremy Davies is awesome and we want him in the show as much as possible. So that's why.
You know, he's already there. He might as well, like, hey, while you're here, I've got these pictures. What do you think?
Kooky pictures of a bear and a wolf.
Otherwise, it'd be kind of like the crime show trope where they're like very busy doing zoo stuff. He's bothering them with pictures and while they're trying to feed lions.
Well, part of it I think, is maybe to draw
yeah
the parallel to the Smithsonian scene in Silence of the Lambs.
Mm.
It does in that way because Peter has that awkwardness to him that you, mm-hmm. those the two guys that were in that the scene when yeah. she takes in the chrysalis or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's sort of an awkwardness. Mm-hmm. I thought also it's because Peter as a Will parallel.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, yeah. it's like he's asking him, you know.
I'm sure Will just wanted to go visit him and was like, I'll take this kooky bear wolf case with me. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it. But it is, it's really cute to see Will kind of delighted about him and the rat.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to point out that's not a Baltimore rat. That's a fancy show rat. Our rats are three times as big and three times bigger and gray.
I watched one cavort yeah. around the empty lot outside of my boss's window at work last week. He's like, my boss is talking to me about something very seriously, and I'm watching a rat, like, climb up a drain pipe like it's some sort of circus act. And I'm like, yep, mm-hmm, sure.
It's Kevin. Mm-hmm. Don't tell anybody about Kevin.
Maybe Kevin will break me out. But I did like how they used Peter to get in that whole thing about the wolf and the bear can be trained to work together. These predators yes. can work together. Well, I don't know if bears are considered predators as much as omnivores.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take these two disassociated creatures. And I was like, oh, it's like Hannibal wanting to work with Will. I see how this goes.
They can be friends.
Then we have Randall here in his workshop mm-hmm. making his crazy cave bear suit.
Cave bear pneumatic suit thing.
Which is just really like kind of a cool gear
mm-hmm.
shot. And then the people at the bonfire, where again, I'm like, people are not that far away from what's going on. And I'm like, why is there canoodling at a random bonfire away from the party? And I, Justin came in and I was like, somebody had a lot of fun shooting this because there's just all this mauling
yes.
happening to the guy. And then the woman like runs and face plants and there's snow. And Justin's like, not her. She did not have fun.
She had a bad day. All right, let's fall in the snow again. We have to find a new patch. Can you fall harder?
Can you really get your face in that snow?
One more time for safety.
And there were a lot of close-ups of blood dripping onto snow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everybody take a drink.
Slushy drink.
Ching. And when Will is doing his reimagining,
mm-hmm.
that's one of my favorite scenes of all of his reimaginings, mm. the whole part with the fire
mm-hmm.
when it like reignites. Oh, and yeah.
That is cool looking.
I really like that. As he's watching, the Raven Stag is watching with him
mm-hmm.
in that part. So the Raven Stag shows up three times in this
mm-hmm.
episode.
Mm-hmm.
Twice. It does. I was mistaken when he's out in the woods at his house.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no.
And that's where I made my point to myself. I was like, it's his for him. And then we have Randall again, and they're talking about him. You know, Hannibal's talking about him in the... actually, it's a little bit later, but they have Randall. And I was like, furry, otherkin. I don't know what he'd be described as.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess somebody like inside of it, it might be like an otherkin situation, but from outside of it, you're like, this person has a psychosis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I liked where Hannibal says that he was it, actually, I can't remember if it was Hannibal or Willow said it, but he got inside his psychosis and tamed it.
Mm.
Which is kind of, I think, how I mean, I don't know if Hannibal sees himself as having any sort of psychosis.
I think Hannibal sees himself as a survivor who's like, I don't know that, you know, he's tamed himself, but mm-hmm. he's like living a very successful life doing exactly what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's making it work for him.
Is he a Hannibal in a Hannibal suit?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Because that's a recurring theme of they called him a human in a person suit.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole... Buffalo Bill suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And then Randall's in his suit.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about that. Good point, Justin.
We all put on our skins.
We do.
Yeah.
Sorry, it just reminded me of the whole thing with the BTS album and the Youngin persona. They think it's going to have a whole like thing about like Young and the persona and the all that stuff. Like,
interesting.
Yep. People, all sorts of theories.
Love Yourself tour.
No, the next one's called Map. I think it's called Map of the Persona. Is the next album they have Map coming out. Map of the Persona. Okay. So yes, the mask that we all wear in public. And I was like, this is both great and super pretentious. It's kind of right up my alley. Sorry.
No, but there's something like very, I mean, very anti-hero about Hannibal being a voice for people who can't express themselves the way they want to.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you put aside like the murderous cannibal aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And there's this great Hannibal as champion
mm-hmm.
for people who've gone through trauma or people who can't be themselves. Just be like, no, you need to own that shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're a survivor. You need to like be who you were meant to be.
Well, and like with
that part of the message is fabulous.
But like with Margot, I'm like, who's had something like that? Maybe not exactly what happened to her, but a similar disempowering situation. Mm-hmm. Not thought about bringing revenge,
yeah,
on the person who did that to you,
mm-hmm.
and to have somebody be like, yeah, that's perfectly legitimate. Yeah.
Yep, totally valid that you feel that way. Yep. Would you like some help?
Would be thrilling, thrilling. The whole guns lack intimacy.
Yeah. This is where they're sitting on the desk.
Yes.
I know.
It's so casual.
He's got his ass on the desk.
I think his sleeve's pushed up, too.
I thought they were scoot next to each other closer.
Yeah, and then they're, like, sitting next to each other talking about murder.
Reach over, hold hands.
So
over
cute.
A gun.
Murder date. But I thought about... I don't know if it's stuff that you've talked about before, but well, in here they're talking about power and claiming mm-hmm. your power mm-hmm. and coming into your power. And I was like, that's heady talk. That's like, whew,
all about that.
Maybe not quite this situation.
Just don't become a serial killer.
So then we're in the lab. We get our other little comic relief bit of the, I love that thing with the cave bear where he's like, because they're a vegetarian? He's like, no, because they've been extinct for 28,000 well, years.
It's like talking to a very excited 8-year-old mm-hmm. talking about bears.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and they're vegetarian, and they're all dead.
Yeah. So,
nah. They're always trying to one-up themselves.
Actually, did you know?
Yeah.
Well, I know this.
Well, I said I like that. I think it's... is it Jimmy who's coming out with, like, the animal facts again?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did you know?
Yeah, because he likes animals more than people.
But the the animal in the scene, it's like he has that, like, I'm so concerned. Look at his face. He's like, look at me. I'm so concerned and I'm being super helpful.
Yeah, when he pulls Jack aside, he's like, Jack, the skirts. I'm a very... edge of my psychiatric practice mm-hmm. and the oath that I've sworn. Oh, shut up, Hannibal. Whoa.
Sorry, dog break.
There's a bear and a wolf attacking us.
There's a bear and a wolf coming in through the window.
Danger. I will look.
When he tells us that there might possibly be a terrible thing happening outside, we have to go look.
Oh, that's part of it.
And you know what's there most of the time?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing happens. I think we're safe.
Thanks
to the dog. I mean, if you can't have a pack like Will does, at least you can have one really loud dog.
And cats.
To make sure you're safe.
Cats who stay on the couch.
So next up, they go to the... Hannibal goes to the Natural History Museum. Mm. I don't know if it's supposed to be the one in D.C. The one in D.C. does not look like this.
No, it doesn't.
No, it does not.
Although it's just been through a renovation, so I actually don't know what it looks
like. Maybe they'll have turned the lights back on by then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be brighter. Actually, did they use the front... I just realized, is the front of that the front of the same front that they use for the Baltimore State Hospital?
Hmm. I don't know. I didn't mark it at the time, so I'm not sure.
It was a big stone building. They all look alike.
Yeah.
And
And this was such a good... You can sort of take this whole discussion between Hannibal and Randall and sort of look at it from a different facet mm-hmm. of Hannibal really, you know, like, he really wants Randall to go after Will. Mm-hmm. He wants Randall to go after Will and wants Will to win. Mm-hmm. I wondered to myself if Randall had gone after Will and had killed Will, mm-hmm. what would Hannibal have done then? Would he have gone and killed Randall? Because he basically is like straight up like, I know what's going on with you and you know what's all these mm-hmm. things about me. So would he have even let Randall
live
after that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
He was just a tool.
Yeah.
For Will's becoming.
Yep.
But just the way he, like, teases the whole thing out of Randall mm-hmm. and talks to him about it.
Yeah.
And also, like, if this is one of those, like, coin toss moments or something where, or if he's so confident in Will that he knows that.
I don't think he knows. I mean, I think it's a mm-hmm. coin toss thing. I think Hannibal's all about creating chaos and mm-hmm. seeing where the shards land, mm-hmm. like, and then making something right. out of it. Yeah, I don't think he for sure knows that Will's going to win that fight.
Has he done that before with anybody else that we see in the show? That directly? He recognizes Tobias as another killer, but he doesn't do anything about it.
No. But I just think he plays it kind of fast and loose with all of his decisions.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And then Jack and Will are at the... and I'm like, as Jack is talking to Randall, I'm like, Jack does not give a fuck anymore.
No.
He's like, okay, here's what this is what's going on. We totally, you're a suspect. Cave bears.
I woke up today, fucking cave bear man attacks people.
He has this look on his face like, what is my life?
Yeah.
Yes. It's like he's going and having a conversation with Hannibal and having to hang out with the nerds.
Which right. I had to think about. I was like, wait a second. At this point, Bella's still alive.
Yes.
And he is having to chase after, like, cave bear men.
Cave bear men. And have these bizarre conversations with people.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he's so over it.
He's very done.
Yeah.
But then, you know, here's Randall doing some, you know, Hannibal level of I'm telling you the truth,
mm-hmm.
but telling you a different truth that is actually mm-hmm. true. Because he learned from the best.
Yeah, and I love how Will's like slinking around, yeah. sort of in the background, and Randall's like, "Ugh, who's this dude?
Who is this dude?" Margot showing up at Will's house, which I mean, I'd be like, "Why are you just giving?" Oh, well, she did say I looked up your appointment, and I'm like, "Wait, would the appointment book include his address?"
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, if you've read the books enough, you know that, like, the Vergers have access to all sorts of stuff. Yeah. They could be, like, ask a private investigator to be like, find me this dude's address.
Well, and the whole thing where he's like, well, I'd look at my appointment in the book or whatever. And I was like, it's this thing where I'm like, both these people have these sort of survival instinct ways of...
It's the funniest conversation that they have where she's just like, what the hell is going on? Like, what is your deal?
And I had a note to myself. I was like, Will is very non-judgmental. She's like, I tried to kill my brother. And he's like, I tried to kill Hannibal.
Yeah, it's a really funny conversation.
The person who tried to kill somebody else in me recognizes the person who tried to kill somebody else in you. I have a note. It's Hannibal's office, and I can't remember who's talking to who at this point, but it's more of these, like, admitted truths. I had a note here that Hannibal's opening up without saying anything. Oh, and he talks about the whole, thinking about God and the church collapses.
Oh, the church collapses, which mm-hmm. is from the books, and it's so great that they put that in there, because it's, like, such a Hannibal thing. Be like, it's my little hobby. I just read the paper and cut out when churches collapse on people. It's kind of fabulous.
Because God should be stopping that stuff if he really loved them, but he didn't. So I guess he doesn't, or he doesn't care.
Well, he says that great thing where Will's like, oh, so it's about good and evil for you. He's like, no, God's got nothing to do with good and evil. And, like, again, you get the sense that Hannibal is in a personal battle with God. That's all this is about.
Just a grudge match.
It's just, yeah, a grudge match.
Then when he talks to Randall, his word, it reminds me, I didn't go back to actually check the words, but it reminds me him dealing with the dragon.
Talking about the dragon. Totally.
It's like, this is the little precursor.
Yep.
To what comes later.
Yep.
And then the whole end scene, I'm like, no, Buster.
I remember watching this on television when Buster like bolted out. He's like, no
dogs are supposed to get hurt.
And luckily, like, there was on Twitter at the time, like, Brian would tweet as the show was on, and a lot of other actors would. Mm-hmm. So Brian said, like, Buster's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, while it aired, he assured everybody that Buster was going to be okay. And I was like, oh, thank God.
The fastest little fat dog, because he is kind of a snossage.
He's a little snossage. But he's going out there. He doesn't know what's out there. And he's just going to fucking
You know why?
It.
You know why? I know why. Because he's a terrier.
Terriers are the best.
Yeah. Because there could be a caveman bear, like, at our door, and Ranger would be like, fuck off. She's mine. F you. He wouldn't actually do anything, but he'd make it sound like he was.
Yeah, I love that Buster gets, like, out to the woods and then, like, falls down.
I know. And you don't even know, like, what happened to him. He could have, like, tripped over a stick at that point.
He probably didn't even get close to the...
No.
Or he's like Ranger. He got a little paw packed in his little snow packed in his paw pad and just fell over.
Yeah.
I like Dawn. It doesn't work.
I'm like, why is my dog suddenly limping? And he's like, I have snow in my feet. And then he just sinks to the ground.
He falls into the snowbank. He's just a drama queen.
Yeah, yeah. But he's really brave against, you know, imagined terrors at our door. But yeah, the whole, and I'd forgotten, for some reason I always thought that Randall comes through the front window, not that side window over his bed. And I was like, so how much was it filmed there and how much did they do and insert to get that whole effect?
Yeah, I don't know.
Coming through the window.
It's not like they busted through the actual window, so.
I mean, they replaced the panel for the finale in the finale house, but I don't think they did it for this one.
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody did a really great, I wish I could remember who it was, either on Tumblr or somebody did a really great edit of that scene where Hannibal's in his murder basement and flips off the light right before he kills Bev.
Mm-hmm.
And Will, as he's turning off the light, waiting for Randall Tear to come through, and they put him side by side, and it's super awesome.
Ooh, that's so cool. And then Hannibal opening up the door to hit, and the like
opera plays.
And it was a very like it felt like a religious painting composition of Will like standing there at the head of the table.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where he says the even Steven? Does he say it there?
Yes. Yep.
Which is funny. It's kind of a like very silly flat phrase to be like, here you go.
It's a dad phrase.
Dad phrase. But yeah, and just you could just all that suppressed like emotion in Hannibal at that point is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you can see him kind of like, oh my God, this is so great.
I know. It's better than flowers. Nobody's ever given me something like this before. But I'm sort of like, okay, so Will kills him, chucks him in his car, drives the body up to Baltimore in like the back of his...
Yeah.
We don't even know what he's driving at this point. In my head, it's still like a Volvo station wagon. Drives it all the way up there. Manages to get it in. I'm like, Hannibal's got to have off-street parking.
Yeah.
like
a garage in the back alley.
I'm not dragging a body into his house. It's my drunk friend. I knew there'd be a trail of blood or something.
Man, this Cape Bear guy can drink a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And when he countered Fell's Point.
When he comes through the window, is he in his suit? I don't think he's in the suit, though, because you see the flashback in the next episode where he's, like, beating him up. And I don't think he's in. I think he, like, takes it off at some point.
Don't we see him running off after him saying, like, I'm not going to follow you or I'm not going to watch?
Yeah, but he's in the suit.
He's in the suit at that point. And he's in the suit in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to, if I remember the fight, like.
That's something I have to go back and watch. I thought he busted through in the suit.
I'm like, maybe they had a big long fight and then he took it off and then they fought. I don't know, because I'm remembering the scene where he's like punching him and imagining Hannibal's face.
And it's his face without like the cave bear thing on.
Yeah, he doesn't have the cave bear thing on. Because honestly, I feel like if somebody's in a like pneumatic, whatever, like reconstructed crazy cave bear suit, that Will wouldn't really have much of a chance unless he...
Well, he shot him first, right? He shot him with a shotgun when he came through the window.
Does he? I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah. Oh. I think.
I was watching all the window action and being like, how did they shoot this?
Maybe Randall Tier took all of his cave bear outfit off because he was like, I want this to be more intimate.
Mono y mono. So, yeah. It was great.
Yeah. The whole opera at the end and the... Yeah. They're like, we're going to cook your first person together.
Okay. Well, at first they have to dismember him and reconstruct him.
Yeah.
And he saves the parts and puts them in his freezer in his barn. Justin, that's why I really want a freezer downstairs.
I'm giving you the side eye. I don't trust you anymore.
For my murdering. It's for my murdering parts. I totally want to get a cow share. Wink, wink. That's what it's going to be for.
What were they before there were leftovers?
They were people. So, yeah. So, that was season 2, episode 9. Pretty good one. I mean, I feel like this one is sort of a, not a filler episode, but another one of those, like, we're bringing all these different elements into play.
Yeah. And, I mean, now that Randall's laying on the dining room table, like, things are really going to heat up.
Now that we've got a murder.
Yeah.
Like, a pretty, like, straight up, like, there's no, I don't want to say it's an honest murder, but he's like, I killed this guy, as opposed to all the cannibals who are like, this person is dead. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah, and then they're going to, like, have a super sexy dinner where they eat that guy.
Lots of suggestive eating.
Lots of suggestive eating coming up. So that's exciting.
So, yay. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Recommendations.
Oh.
I don't have any recommendations.
You don't have any?
I couldn't think of any.
I have two.
Okay.
I have to look one thing up really quickly. I will talk about the first one. Overinvested Podcast. Mm. I've mentioned it before. As part of their Patreon is going to be doing... their Hannibal episode, finally.
Yay!
Gavia is a Hannibal fan. Morgan, I think, said on Twitter, got through both, like, the first two seasons.
Mm.
And I think Gavia said they, like, rewatched a certain number of episodes in order to, like, be able to talk through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I think they rewatched Mizumuno and something else, and then they are watching the last two.
That's okay.
So they're going to talk about it. So
yeah, that'll be good.
I will be interested. And I know, even if, like, Morgan's not a fan and is quite willing to, like, dissent, have a dissenting opinion. But I'm like, that's interesting because I like to hear.
And it's a big podcast with a lot of listeners, right? I mean,
I think they do have quite a lot of listeners. And yeah. I know, I want to say, I think Gavi is up for a huge award, or am I thinking about somebody else, like, this year? So
so yay for Hannibal coverage.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So, and I started supporting them on Patreon, so you do have to be a supporter in order to get it.
Oh, it's a special Patreon episode.
Yes, they're doing a special Patreon.
Okay.
So, and then I want to talk about, this is not something I have watched, and it's something a friend is trying to drag me into.
It is a, there is a Chinese show called Guardian. It is not related to Goblin.
Has Slippy been posting about this? Slippy on Twitter? Also,
yeah, Slippy has posted about Goblin.
Yeah, but.
And Guardian.
Guardian most recently.
Yes.
Okay, this show seems bizarre.
So it's based off of, shit, I can't remember, it's based off of a comic or something. And I think it's two guys who do investigation, I think possibly supernatural stuff.
Okay.
And I think in the original format, they're gay. I don't know if they're a couple, but they're gay. Mm-hmm. That got made into a TV show where they can't make that happen because it's China. So there's all the tension.
Oh my God.
And my my friend who is really into it, is her home fandom is Due South.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves all of that tension between the characters. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it is the same kind of thing. She said also there is an amazing fan vids, there's amazing memes, there's amazing fanfics out. She said the two leads are also amazing, but all the other actors kind of suck. And people, she's like, the translations are, people are translating it for wherever it's being watched. Mm-hmm. And well, here, I'm gonna quote from, she was posting about it online. Thank dogs for the fandom, because the show itself really is objectively terrible and the fan generated subtitles don't help. Because, and then there's a clip from one where the fan generated subtitle says utter nonsense in parentheses, translator, I have no idea how to express his petting tone, I'm dire. So they just like couldn't quite figure out how to translate it.
Wow.
And my friend was saying that they have to figure out a lot of the plot through context, but she sticks around for the eye fucking. So it is, they're very good actors with mind blowing chemistry and the guts to make a show like this, despite China's hostility towards homosexuality and the very real danger that the actors are in for not conforming to societal standards.
Wow.
And we're basically like, yes, that is some excellent, excellent eye fucking. There's just a lot of really like slow. I mean, you watch dramas, you people look at each other. Yeah. So this time they've got two guys doing it, and apparently it's right over the top. So, Slippy tweets. That's,
it looked bonkers. She tweeted the end episode, and like, I was like, what is going on?
I don't even know. I don't know if it's an ongoing show or what's happening.
Maybe it was a season ender, but she's like, so people have told me about this, but I didn't believe it happened, but it's happening.
Oh, well.
It was, like, really bizarre stuff.
And my friend, she was like, I'm just in it for the fan vids and the memes. I'm just in it for the fan vids. And she's like, makes sense and is kind of random, and the other actors are not good. So we have to start watching American Gods again.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about it after you see it, because I'm curious to know if
I do know you're not allowed to ride the carousel,
because when they're walking around, I was like, is it really like
Neil says that when he wrote it less intense than it actually is.
Okay.
And I can verify that he explains it, but it's, I mean, going through it is, it's really overwhelming. I barely remember the last chunk of it, because I'm like, at that point, my brain was so fried. And I don't know if I've said it on here before. Yeah, but
last part's like pipe organ, steam engine, pipe organ, beer barrel, vat.
Random like gun, like replica gun collection. More replica gun collection.
Well, I mean, the first episode's up on Star, so if y'all want to watch it,
Oh, cool, because I was just going to get a Stars again. We were going to re-up for the season. But I, it was the thing where you're just, and like dolls. I think there's a lot of dolls at the end. I don't know. I have a picture from our vacation before we went in, and we're like, yay, we're at the House of the Rock. And there's the whale. Here we go. And then there's a picture of us, like,
exhausted.
I know, our faces are like, what did we just do?
Well, I've heard you talk about it, but when I was watching the episode, I'm like, because it's nuts.
Okay, yeah. Well, we'll watch it, because it is not. Folks, we're going to watch it.
My very local town that they just completely overdo all the Christmas all at once. And it's kind of like if you took randomly.
Right.
Yeah.
If you kind of like let 34th Street like curate something at the Smithsonian. Yeah.
Throughout Christmas. Yeah.
There were circus miniatures in one room, I think.
Oh, I've read circus miniatures after the whole room where that's like circus performer mannequins balanced on top of life-size elephant. Folks, it's worth going.
Yeah. Wow.
It is worth going. Go to its beautiful area.
And stay at the Dong Hue Inn.
Well, I was reading about Jose Andres's opening like a bunch of restaurants simultaneously in New York, like as part of a whole Spanish concept thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I get a little like, he's one of ours every time I read something about him. Or when he was feeding people in DC during the shutdown.
Yeah.
Yum. I still need to go to Haleo. So that's it for today. So you can visit Head Full of Hannibal at headfullofhannibal.com. Head Full of Hannibal on Tumblr and Instagram, and Head Full of Hanny on Twitter. Contrary to what Justin said earlier, you cannot call us anymore. We lost our Google phone number.
Did we?
Yeah, we got an email because we never used it. They discontinued
it.
It's
your loss.
It.
It's all your fault. Sorry.
Yeah, so if you wanted to call us, oh well.
Too bad. We would have sent you something.
I know. Send us an email or say hi to us online somewhere. Yeah. You can't send us mail. We're not giving out our address. So yeah. This was our episode.
And we're on Spotify.
Oh, yeah, we're on Spotify
now. I'd like to shout out to our fans in Germany.
Ooh.
31 streams over the past few periods. United Kingdom, Uruguay, Netherlands, Philippines, France, what? Italy, Belgium, New Zealand, India, and Malaysia.
Whoa, you're making that up.
I can show you. Like somewhere I'm not sure stats actually mean anything. But I'm not,
like they could have backed right out or...
Drunk ladies talking about Hannibal. Yeah,
that's amazing. This is what you can see through Spotify. Whether it's, you know, one of you or 100 of you.
94% female, 4% male, and 1% not.
Send out the statistics.
You want the age breakdown?
Wow. You know what we're going to do with those numbers? You know what we're going to do? In a couple of weeks, we're going to get together, and we're going to eat some food, and we're going to drink some drinks. Yeah. So this was our episode 30. Awesome. Where we did season 2, episode 9, Shizakana. It's pretty awesome. We will see you all in a couple of weeks. We don't have any sort of... We dropped the Don't Go in the Murder Basement.
Did we?
I think we stopped using it by accident. We just forgot about it. So
yeah,
we need
it never
else.
Really took off.
We need something else.
Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother. Okay. We just dated ourselves. And like, you're like, oh, these are a couple of white folks in their 40s. They listen to NPR. So yeah, we will talk to you all in a couple weeks. Bye.